Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Do divisions within a state political party impact you? What's the definition of conservatism? The Dakota Political Junkies join us today to dig into just a few of the state's top political headlines. Today, we welcome John Hunter from the Madison Daily Leader. John, hi.
Hi, Lori.
Like how I save my big philosophical questions for you. You're tired of hearing that, aren't you?
I don't mind.
We're going to dig into the definition of conservatism today, John.
That's all.
and why not? Seth Tupper, are you there with us as well from the Rapid City Journal?
Yep, I'm here.
All right, Seth, welcome. And let's start with a piece that you wrote in the Rapid City Journal. You can find it at rapidcityjournal.com, which you should always do anyway to read what Seth Tupper writes. That's an invite-only event. Tell us a little bit about the division.
Yeah, so last Friday, a group of seven legislators here in Rapid City, Republican legislators, hosted an invite-only meeting where they invited about 100 community leaders, and about 40 of them showed up. And they had basically, the legislators had what they described as kind of a listening session, or a reverse Cracker Barrel, so to speak, where the invited guests did most of the talking and the legislators did most of the listening about community development issues, about education, about healthcare, about things like that. And since it was an invite-only event, some of the people in the Republican Party out here, some of the legislators who considered themselves to be more in the more conservative wing of the party, took exception to the fact that they weren't invited. And that kind of gave me an opportunity to write about something that people who follow politics out here have known for a long time, but maybe would be news to more of the general readers, that there's quite a bitter divide in the Republican Party out here between Republicans who consider themselves to be the true conservatives of the party, and Republicans who those people say are basically insufficiently conservative to call themselves Republicans.
And Seth, what's driving that? Is it a spending issue? It is a social issues? Is it just personal?
I think the first two, you nailed it right on the head right there. In last year's primaries, where we had, I think I looked the other day, we had 20-some primaries in the Black Hills involving Republicans against Republicans for legislative seats. And a lot of that was driven by the raising of the sales tax that was signed by the legislature and governor to fund teacher salaries. It was also driven by some tax and fee increases that were passed before that to raise funds for roads and bridges. That was a lot of it. I think people in the more conservative wing of the party felt like those were unnecessary moves and not really aligning with conservative fiscal values. And then the social issues are more of what I brought out in the recent story. As anybody who follows the legislature knows, there's been a lot of focus in recent sessions on bills restricting the bathroom use of transgender people. There's been a lot of bills on trying to expand gun rights and do away with restrictions. And there's a tension in the party, I think, and especially out here in the Black Hills, between some of the more moderate Republicans who don't necessarily want to spend a lot of time on those issues and want to spend more time on other issues. And so there's a tension between them and others in the party who feel like those issues are really at the core of what it means to be a conservative Republican.
John Hunter, let's bring you into the conversation. And my first question is, does the tension within the political party make a difference to voters? How do they sort of see it? Obviously, in this case, they saw it because certain voices weren't invited to the event. Are there other ways that tension within a party kind of rolls down to citizens?
Well, I think it becomes inevitable. In fact, I think that tension starts to radiate out. In South Dakota, where the Republican Party has dominated state politics for so long, and its strength may be even gaining, it was inevitable that there would be some sort of fracture. When you have a supermajority all over the place, people, I think maybe even human nature, that says, hey, we got to split up into smaller groups, right? Mm-hmm. So we're like this. I mean, I think Adam and Eve and Cain and Abel probably didn't agree on everything.
So they clearly not.
they split apart into smaller groups. So I think, I would think it was inevitable, and it wouldn't surprise me if there are three wings of it, right? So if you have the ultra-conservatives, the moderate conservatives, the hybrid conservatives or whatever. But I think it's inevitable, and it's kind of too bad. South Dakota does, I think, in a lot of cases, reach across those divides to whether it's internal party or between parties or with independents or anyone else, tends to reach across those things and get things done by the time it's all done. But I just think there's a human nature. And remember, our political process encourages outliers, where it's, you know, if you go into an election, say, you know what, I'm pretty much in the middle on everything, and I'm going to compromise with everybody, and I'm going to, you know, then you don't get nominated or maybe elected. So I think it's inevitable that there are those tensions. Fortunately, I think South Dakota can usually get past those to get things done.
Seth, do you think it helps the party at all? Does it help the Republican Party in the state pick up some of those voters? I mean, there just aren't enough Democrats to beat up on, or there aren't enough Democrats to vote for. Do you think it helps the party pull in more independent-minded voters?
I don't know. I don't know if it helps or hurts the party because, of like what John said, there's just so little opposition. I mean, especially, as I mentioned, out here in the Black Hills, where the scales are balanced more toward Republicans and voter registration, even more so than they are elsewhere in the state. You would think that a division like this would hurt the party, but there are so few Democrats running for office out here that the Republican Party can be divided, and they can be vicious in against each other in primary campaigns, which they often are here. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't seem to hurt them. As they often say here, the real race is in the primary, and that's usually two or three Republicans running in the primary, and whoever wins that race typically goes on to win the general election. So it doesn't seem to hurt the party in general, but it does definitely influence, you know, the positions that the party takes and the identity that the party will have going forward.
All right, John Hunter, I've got a 16-year-old. It won't be too long before she registers to vote. If she decides she wants to be Republican, what the heck does that mean for a young voter anymore? When you look at, you know, these vastly different issues, is there a way to sort of define conservatism in this state to help young people and others figure out where they fall on the political spectrum when they register to vote?
Well, that's a great question. It's a perfect time for your daughter, too. You know, frankly, the first place I would go, this will sound silly, but I'd go to the website of each of the parties and print out a copy of their platform. Mm-hmm. So the convention goes through this exercise every year, and they try to define who they really are. And that's as far as registration of the political party or not, that's a place to start. Now, as Seth has pointed out, there's a broad range within each of those things. So even though you're a candidate or an elected official with an R behind your name or a D behind your name, does not say that you're going to agree on every plank in that platform, but it does kind of say, generally, this is where I am. So, I mean, I would go to that place first. And if she's like most South Dakotans, you're going to check off some boxes on one side and check off some boxes on the other, and you got to decide, okay, am I dedicated enough to this to sign up with one or the other? Am I just going to kind of register as an independent, so I'll vote in general elections but not have the influence in primary elections. But that's actually a place I would start. It's not a bad place. It doesn't have the same vitriol that it does in campaign mm-hmm. speeches, but it helps define at least a little bit who they are.
Or in those mailers that come to your house, and it makes some pretty wild accusations, right, Seth?
Yeah, there's been a few. Well,
I think Seth is right, too, that I think in Rapid City you have a little bit, you know, more heated exchanges than in many parts of the state, maybe all parts of the state. I think the rhetoric goes a little one level more, don't you think, Seth?
Absolutely. You know, I made a reference in this most recent story to some of the tactics we saw in last year's primary, but
yeah,
Republican on Republican crime, so to speak. There were postcards alleging that people had committed adultery. There were postcards alleging that because people hadn't been sufficiently supportive of gun rights bills, that they were basically enabling rapes and assaults. And there were, you know, other postcards with similarly wild accusations. And that's the kind of thing we see often out here in Republican legislative primaries.
So, Seth, do you see a healthy, you know, sort of discourse within those factions, or is it really just disintegrated to the point where it's postcards and non-invites?
I think it's disintegrated into something that has gotten really personal. And maybe you know, as it gets really personal and it goes out in the public and stories like the one I wrote, maybe then that's an opportunity for people in the party to get together and say, you know, this has gotten a little too far and maybe we need to rein this in. But we'll see. Maybe it'll just continue to get more nasty.
All right. And we should also bring up the idea of nonpartisan primaries, you know, rears its head again. Is there an appetite for that, John, do you think, in the state after it got pretty close last time, didn't it? The idea
I'd say there's enough of an appetite to kind of keep discussing that. But I wouldn't anticipate that happening soon. I think it really depends on if, you know, if you do have races where you have a Republican primary, a challenged Republican primary, and no Democratic candidate. The more of those that you happen, the more this would take forward. Now, in the governor's race, where you have two leading Republicans in the primary and a strong Democratic candidate, people won't have an appetite for that. They'll just say, look, this process works. You're going to the two fight it out. Then you'll have another good race in the fall. It's going to be when you have two Republicans in a primary and zero Democrats that this will take on new momentum.
All right, let's finish up with another piece, Seth, that you wrote in the Rapid City Journal, and that's a lawsuit, EB-5. You want to give us a quick update in the final minute we have here?
Yeah, just, you know, the EB-5 scandal continues, seems to never end, but there are a couple of pending lawsuits out there, and one that I wrote about is in state court where about 30 Chinese investors who claim to have lost almost $19 million collectively investing in the Northern Beef Packers plant in Aberdeen before it went bankrupt and was reborn under new owners. They are suing to try to get that money back that they invested through the EB-5 immigrant investor program. And in that lawsuit, the state of South Dakota was a defendant, but recently won its dismissal from the lawsuit. And that was appealed to the state Supreme Court. The state Supreme Court decided not to take the appeal. And so that lawsuit continues now with the remaining defendants, which are basically Yoke Bolan, who formerly ran the EB-5 program for the state, and some of his business entities. So this thing, that scandal that started, as far as the public was concerned, back in 2013, here we are 4 years later, and it's still dragging on through the courts.
It's still doing the work. RapidCityJournal.com, you can find that. Seth Tupper joined us today from inside the Black Hills Surgical Hospital studio at the new Black Hills Bureau there in Rapid City, right down the street from the Rapid City Journal. Seth, thanks for coming by.
You're welcome.
John Hunter from Madison, publisher of the Madison Daily Leader. Thank you so much, John.
Thanks, Lori.